to another story of international intrigue first. What do you make of the obsolete Soviet-made missile material in need of repair, hidden under thousands of bags of Cuban sugar? Good Lord. Now, the Cuban Foreign Ministry, it's owned up to this strange mix of cargo being sent where else? To North Korea. Panamanian authorities have revealed that they raided the ship last week thinking it was carrying drugs. No, no, no. It had been doing that 3 years ago. It had form, but this time it was weapons. And the discovery has raised questions about Cuba's ties with North Korea and what other countries might have been involved in that illegal weapons shipment. Now, joining us to discuss this, Professor Andrew O'Neill. He's director of the Griffith Asia Institute, a former intelligence analyst with the Department of Defence. Andrew, good evening.
Hi, good evening.
Now, this was not exactly current military stock we're talking about. This is some missile parts and other things used in the Vietnam War. Why would you get those repaired?
Well, according to reports, a lot of the equipment that was located on the vessel intercepted by the Panamanian authorities can be dated to the late 1950s and primarily the surface-to-air, the so-called SA-2 system, which is a surface-to-air system as part of integrated air defence systems, which were first introduced Soviet-era technology in the late 1950s. So we are talking about very old technology, but we're also talking about technology that has been successively upgraded over the years. And, you know, despite the age of this technology, it is still used by a range of countries, including North Korea, including Burma, including Iran, including Syria, and including Cuba. So there are a number of countries that still use the SA-2 systems as part of their integrated air defence networks, and it would seem that there is an emerging, possibly even a blooming defence relationship between Havana and Pyongyang. I think it's worth noting that Cuba and North Korea recently have stepped up the pace of their relationship. Late last month in June, there was the visit of the North Korean, the chief of the North Korean General Staff to Havana on a formal high-level delegation visit. We've had major agreements in 2012 between Cuba and North Korea on economics and science and technology, quote-unquote, which is often a euphemism for military exchange. So I think what we're seeing here is evidence of an emerging a stepping up of this bilateral relationship in the military sphere.
The whole thing of Cuba and missiles and boats has some sort of historical resonance, but why in this world would you simply not fly the responsible technicians out from North Korea to do that work in Cuba? It's sort of an interesting that they would have to send the hardware back.
Yeah, it does seem very strange. I mean, it's one thing intercepting boats on the high sea or in the Panama Canal. It's quite another to intercept and to force down aircraft. Of course, that's impossible. I mean, you can do it, but certainly under international law, it's a lot more problematic than boarding vessels on the high sea. So I think that's a reasonable question. One can only assume that the Cuba and North Korea have, certainly the North Korean vessel was an authorised vessel. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It had, according to reports, turned off its tracking system after it left Russian territory on its way to the Western Hemisphere, and so you have to assume that it did actually believe the North Korean authorities believed that they could evade detection. But it seems on the way home that they were caught.
Could the parts being transported here, could they be stripped down and reconfigured into things which are a little bit more up-to-date and deadly?
Look, I think that's entirely plausible. I think we can virtually rule out Cuba offering North Korea anything that would be of value. I mean, North Korea has one of the most highly integrated and hardened air defence systems of any country in the world, essentially. Mm. They have been working at this over decades. They have high-level technology of their own. So, you know, North Korea is a well-known supplier of military equipment. It's a hard currency export commodity for North Korea. So absolutely, it stands in a sense, it would make a lot of sense for the North Koreans to be offering their services, not only in selling off-the-shelf material, but also in upgrading and if you like, rebooting existing technologies. But as I say, I mean, it's a high-risk venture transporting these things across the high seas.
I mean, we assume that the ultimate destination is Pyongyang, is North Korea, but could there be some sort of private sector involvement, if you like, a third party?
Yeah, I mean, that's difficult to say. I mean, you know, the North Koreans operate through a host of front companies, a lot of which have been named in successive UN Security Council resolutions, including UN Security Council Resolution 2087 that was introduced this year that tightened up a lot of the existing sanctions against North Korea. Countries like Australia have a range of autonomous sanctions in addition to those sanctions imposed by the Security Council. So it's actually very difficult for the North Koreans to operate with a degree of latitude, given that countries are certainly on the lookout. And when you have, you know, a vessel that with the Democratic People's Republic of Korea flag painted onto the side, it's a massive target for authorities. It's not as if they were trying to smuggle this through ulterior means. You know, this is pretty obviously a North Korean attempt to, you know, transfer material. But on your question, look, it's certainly possible that another country or countries were involved. As I said, Burma, Syria, Iran. You know, there is a history there is a quite well established history of North Korea dealing with these countries, exporting material to these countries, but also these countries themselves exporting material to one another. I mean, for example, Iran and Cuba have a defence relationship. They have a military-to-military relationship. So again, we can't rule out the involvement of third parties.
And the ship itself, too, has been recently in Chinese waters, which muddies the situation even further, I imagine.
Look, from China's point of view, I think it's fair to say that North Korea is a real headache. The last thing China wants, the last thing China needs in terms of its soft power, its public profile, is dealing with an international pariah. And I think for many Chinese decision makers, this will just be another headache. Although clearly, there's no evidence of direct Chinese involvement. Historically, there have been accusations that the Chinese have turned a blind eye to the use of Chinese ports as transshipment points, not just for North Korean missile technology, but also in the past for the transfer of nuclear-related technology, fissile material and equipment and centrifuges and so on, the AQ Khan network, for example. So, you know, there's a track record here, I think, that, you know, the Chinese do have plausible deniability, and I think it would be very difficult to understand why the Chinese would sanction something like this. But again, accusations have been in the past. They have turned a blind eye to some of this behaviour.
A fascinating insight, Andrew O'Neill, into a seldom glimpsed world. Thanks for your time this evening.
Okay, thanks very much.
Professor Andrew O'Neill, he's director of the Griffith Asia Institute, a former intelligence analyst with the Department of Defence, looking at that curious case of the North Korean ship and the old Cuban missiles.